This is Radio Free Pro Wrestling, your home for smart and stunning wrestling debates with lifelong wrestling fans, Sean and Ashley. Let the debate begin.
Well, hello and welcome to this week's episode of Radio Free Professional Wrestling. I'm your host, Sean. And once again, I'm joined by my tag team partner, Ashley. And Ashley, we're coming to everybody on a very crazy and hectic and quite serious week in professional wrestling.
Yeah, a lot of awful reports out there this
week. Okay, for everybody who doesn't want to listen to us discuss the alleged allegations between Vince McMahon and a former employee of WWE, you may fast forward until you hear the start of the Control Center music and you'll be good to go. We just want to give you an advisory right now that we're going to start the show talking about this court case, and there's some awful stuff in this court case.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was ready for this.
You know, actually, coming into this week, honestly, the biggest story we were going to talk about was two things. One, WWE Raw going to Netflix for $5 billion over 10 years with an option of Netflix adding 10 more years to that contract. And the second thing was TKO announcing The Rock was going to join the board of directors. And I kind of wonder, what does The Rock think right now being 1 week in and the first bombshell is this major bombshell?
Yeah, I do not envy him right now. what a way to start off your job. I don't know what happens with him and with this board right now. There's been like reports of them wanting to kind of clear house with some of the people that have been there. I imagine The Rock just being installed, though, they're not going to worry too much about, you know, like his presence there.
True. Okay, so on Thursday of this past week, when the Wall Street News Journal reported the filing of a lawsuit between Vince McMahon, WWE, John Laurinaitis, and a former WWE employee, Janelle Grant, and in this lawsuit, she's alleging basically Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, treated her basically like a sex toy over a course of her employment, which lasted from 2019 to 2022. Along with that, she's alleging that when this quote-unquote special counsel was put together to investigate the alleged hush money that Vince McMahon paid out to certain people for certain activities that he allegedly did, she was more than willing to come forward and testify and offer her testimony, and the special counsel did not reach out to her or ask for any of her information.
Yeah, there's going to have to be a damn good explanation on somebody's part for that, because it seems like she's been ready, willing, and able to speak. She has text messages. She has evidence. She has all sorts of things that she's not been shy about, you know, like handing over or speaking about. Like I said, I don't know where this leaves a lot of the top people right now, but it's very concerning for any woman who has been in WWF or WWE over the past, you know, years.
Okay, so back in 2019, she was living in an apartment complex that also housed Vince McMahon, and she was introduced to Vince McMahon by the manager of the apartment complex, who was a friend to Miss Grant. Now, Miss Grant was coming off of losing both her parents. She was taking care of them for an extended period of time, so she was unemployed, and the family house got liquidated in a bankruptcy for her parents, so she's in a very vulnerable state as we're coming into the story, and the apartment manager suggests that maybe Vince McMahon could help her out with a position in the WWE. They get introduced. Vince basically creates a new position in the legal department at WWE at the start from 2019 to 2021. Then she moves over to like the SFL for a minute or two. Then eventually she gets handed off to eventually, quote unquote, be the vice president of talent relations and working underneath John Laurinaitis. And that's where basically where her contractual obligations with WWE ends in like June of 2022.
It's very scary to know that, like, we know that there's at least a few more out there. I hope this woman is okay. What I read of that report almost made me sick. Like, it was disturbing.
Okay, we're going to keep this as clean as possible for you guys. I'm going to try to sanitize this as much as I can, but still give you this the series of these charges facing Vince McMahon. She basically has accused Vincent Mann of grooming her to be a sexual servant of him and whoever he pleases. There's text messages to her from Vincent Mann saying, I control you and I control whoever beeps, insert the word there, to you. And there's text saying that to go over to John Larnice's hotel room and quote unquote be his breakfast. And just insert what you think breakfast is, okay? It's just insane. And how this happened in a big corporation without a lot of people knowing, and the fact now that it's all coming out, the reaction of WWE's of her management is lacking, severely lacking.
Yeah, I'm glad he at least resigned as quickly as he did, and there wasn't much of a fight after everything came out. It was just then and done. As we can say, though, and has been noted, that doesn't always mean he's gone. As you said, though, like Triple H, especially to say that he has not read this report at all while being, if not the top guy right now in WWE, at least like one of two top guys in WWE, is almost like irresponsible.
I've been trying to play the devil's advocate here the last 2 days after listening to the WWE press conference after the Royal Rumble, and part of me wants to decide to go like, Triple H is in the world's hardest rock in a hard place. The person accused of all these actions is his father-in-law, the grandfather to all his kids, and the father to his wife, Stephanie McMahon. But he's also the head of WWE right now. It's a no-win situation for Triple H. But I really feel like if there's ever a time for a no comment, it was Saturday night for Triple H saying no comment.
A far better response than I didn't read the report. Let's focus on the positive. Just say it's under investigation. You can't speak on it. Like you said, just say no comment. A million things could have been said better. In a way, though, I mean, I guess I understand. Like you might think you know what you're going to say at that point in time, and then you know life happens, and you just say something, and it just doesn't resonate the way you think it will.
Honestly, that's how I feel about Triple H and that statement from the WWE press conference. I just feel like once everything went live and he's there taking the questions, he just basically said this and he couldn't take it back, so he had to run with it.
Yeah, I feel like that might have been a little bit of it.
Okay, so TKO did make a short statement on the resignation of Vincent Candy McMahon. It basically said on January 26, 2024, Vincent Candy McMahon notified the board of directors of TKO Group Holding Inc. of his resignation from his position as executive chairman and member of the board and any other positions, employment otherwise he has with TKO and his subsidiaries. In each case, it happens immediately. End quote.
Like I said, I'm just glad there was at least swift action and he seemed to just go out without a fight this time.
You know, it's kind of interesting because that happened basically 2 or 3 hours after Slim Jim's announced they were pausing their sponsorship of the WWE Royal Rumble and any sponsorship activities with the WWE. Then the next thing you know, Vince McMahon resigns. And the next thing after that was Slim Jim's comes back aboard and they were a sponsor of the Royal Rumble.
Unfortunately, that's usually the only way to make some sort of impact is to hit them in the wallet. So I know there are brands that are certainly not going to want to be associated with any of this story coming out, especially with that lawsuit. I don't know if anybody else is considering it or has thought about it, but I definitely understand at least the threat from Slim Jim.
And Vince Kennedy McMahon did make a short statement through his legal team saying he vehemently denies all these charges and he's willing to defend his honor. But in order to save face with the WWE, TKO, not to tarnish their brands, he's going to step away from all activities with the company. So that is the current state of everything going on in this legal case. We will keep you informed here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. Ashley, we're going to the Control Center.
This is your Radio Free Pro Wrestling Control Center. All the wrestling news you need to know.
Ashley, our first news story of the week. Back at the beginning of last week, WWE TKO announced a 10-year agreement with Netflix to be the new home of Monday Night Raw. In their case, they're calling it Raw. We don't know if it's going to be on Monday nights. Reading through the story of the agreement, Netflix has the ability to make this 10-year agreement into a 20-year agreement, or they can bail within 5 years of the agreement with WWE. It's interesting that Netflix is the new home of Monday Night Raw. What do you think about it?
It seems streaming is going to be the way to go for pretty much everything lately. So I don't blame WWE for getting in. And it's certainly going to help, I think, both sides. You know, if people aren't subscribed to Netflix right now, it's certainly going to, you know, it's certainly going to increase membership for Netflix. And obviously, we've been wondering for a little while where Raw was going to end up. And now we have an answer.
You know, I got to think about it all week long here. I started out going like, why in the world would you go to Netflix, who hardly ever has anything live streaming, and that be your home for, oh, your flagship program that is live 52 weeks of the year? Then I kept thinking about it again. Netflix is global, where USA Network is here in the United States, and it reportedly has about 90 million households that it's in. WWE gets access to a wider array of viewers through Netflix. They can go to India. They can go into parts of China, areas where WWE hasn't had a strong presence yet. And as we've seen with the TKO merger, they're trying to make WWE the global brand for professional wrestling.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's kind of tough with everything also coming out around this exact same time, which also is kind of, I'm sure, a factor in everybody paying attention. I mean, like I said, it's certainly going to help Netflix, which I do think struggles from time to time, because you see a lot of complaints with, you know, like their original programming and stuff either not lasting or getting canceled like prematurely and stuff like that. But this is something they know they have. It's every week. It's programming every single week for them. It's something that they can promote the hell out of and drive up their membership with.
True. Now, this is going to be the home for all things WWE starting in 2025. For everyone in the UK, Europe, Canada. Now, with Peacock, we still have Peacock through 2026 here in the States, but all signs are pointing to once that deal's up, Netflix is going to get all that content onto their system, and the future home for all the PLEs and the large archive of WWE, ECW, WCW footage that WWE owns is going to be housed on Netflix.
I mean, it makes sense. It would be like, that's kind of like a great incentive to get people to sign up too, especially like that whole back catalog is just insane. So we'll see in 2026 when everything switches over, how it all pans out.
Exactly. Now, moving on to our second news story of the week. Back on Tuesday, after the announcement of Netflix getting WWE Raw, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is announced to be joining the board of directors of TKO. And one of the perks of him joining the board is TKO has given him the rights to use the trademark The Rock. So The Rock owns that now. And trust me, Ashley, that's worth a lot more than all the stocks he's got from TKO in this deal to become a board member.
Oh yeah, no, what you can do with when you own your brand is just unimaginable. It's going to be unstoppable, really.
And look, in The Rock, he's beloved by a lot of people. He has a great, like, positive image. He promotes a lot of stuff. He can be the new face of WWE as we go forward in the post-McMahon era of WWE entertainment / wrestling. And now he has a lot to do because he's going to have to do a lot of work to restore the brand.
Yeah, and I think he is a good guy for the job, you know? Like you said, like, just massive appeal, crossover appeal, and likability. I think he's going to at least help kind of clean up the name right now.
Very true. Now, my third news story of the week, we're going on to, say, Friday/Saturday, as rumors were going around that maybe one Brock Lesnar would be making his return to the WWE in the Royal Rumble. Now, back during our talk about the court case between Vince McMahon and a former WWE employee, one thing I didn't mention, inside the 67 pages of this court case, there's some references about Brock Lesnar maybe being the quote-unquote WWE superstar that Vince McMahon may had offered this employee to. And it makes perfect sense now that TKO and WWE decided to hold off on bringing Brock back. We may never see Brock Lesnar in the new WWE now.
It's very possible with all of these allegations going around. I'm not surprised to not see him show up. It's a good call. It's the right call. I mean, everything out there right now with him is kind of just alleged. I don't know how definite it is that you know, they have him on there, but it's crazy to see somebody in such a public eye in the UFC and in the WWE be named in this.
It is. And I gotta say, it's the one small right move TKO has done in the last 72 to 108 hours.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next news story as I'm going over to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yes, we know we're losing Okada to possibly AEW or WWE down the road, but they managed to have signed Hiromu Tanahashi to a new contract. The Time Bomb will be staying in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I, for one, is very happy about this.
Yeah, no, great. This is great news. Even overshadowing it, like, Tama Tonga is also leaving after 14 years in New Japan, and and Will Ospreay on top of it, they're losing a lot of star power and a lot of, like, solid workers on their card. And to get these key re-signings is going to be important for them.
Very true. As we are coming to the end of January and the start of February here, this is the key New Japan Pro Wrestling signing period. This is usually where their contracts come up and they re-sign. Hiromu Tanahashi is one of the first ones they have re-signed. I'm hoping they sign a few more. And like we said last week, there's a new open level to a lot of talent in New Japan Pro Wrestling because you're missing two main event players. Who's going to fill this void?
I don't know, but I got a couple of names that, like, I could definitely see them, if given the green light, I could see them taking the ball and running with it.
Very true. Okay, we're moving on to my next news story of the week. And this literally happened this afternoon. As rumors have been going around for the last 24 hours or so, CM Punk has come on to Monday Night Raw and announced that he's torn his tricep and he will not be at this year's WrestleMania. There's no timetable for his return to the ring, but on Monday Night Raw, he did address the crowd and saying, like his beloved Chicago clubs, there's always next year. So fingers crossed, wishing CM Punk a speedy recovery, and maybe he'll main event WrestleMania 41.
Yeah, I hope this isn't the same arm that he injured while in AEW. It's always tough to come back from any injury, but to come back from two really major injuries like this, I hope he can heal up fast enough to come back for, like you said, next year's WrestleMania, because to kind of go there with, like, that, you know, it has to be like a factor. You know, you're getting your opportunity to headline and it kind of gets taken away on kind of like a, it didn't even seem like a move, like, you know, it's not a move where you normally see like somebody get hurt or anything, especially in the arm region, but it sucks. And it sucks that both of them are injured too, because not only is CM Punk injured, but Seth Rollins is injured on top of it. So not only did we lose like the opportunity of maybe even, you know, kind of hinting around like both of these guys are going to have to be out for now.
Very true. Now, Rollins is still quote unquote listed for WrestleMania and being the World Heavyweight Champion, but we also have Elimination Chamber coming up here at the end of February. I feel like they're holding and hoping that Rollins can make it to WrestleMania, and whoever takes CM Punk's place is still going to be the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Then Rollins can slide off and have his surgery.
Yeah, I mean, if they need to have him, you know, do something at WrestleMania, like just kind of just have him do like promos or something for now and have him, you know, take a few weeks to recover as much as possible, do what he can at Mania, and then, you know, maybe you finally use the Priest cash in or something.
You know, you still have that briefcase floating around here, and we're getting closer to Money in the Bank again. So I'm going like, Damian, you might want to use this briefcase before the contract becomes null and void.
I know somebody else is going to win it and cash it in before he does.
Okay, so I'm moving on to the next news story, as this comes from the Post Courier, which is a newspaper in the Southern South Carolina region. They did an interview with Adam Copeland. And Adam Copeland in this interview says that AEW is where he's ending his wrestling career. And the most interesting thing from this interview was he still doesn't know how Vince McMahon feels about him leaving WWE, as he left him a message and Vince never got back to him. This is Adam Copeland. Why did you not get back to Adam Copeland?
Yeah, I mean, one of your top draws, your top guys for, I mean, what, like 15 years almost? And a top tag team performer for years before that. I don't know. I mean, he's Vince McMahon. He's doing a lot of stuff. So I don't know how busy he is in his off time.
Got to say that seeing Adam Copeland in this run in AEW, while it started kind of slow, these Adam Copeland open things, like you said last week, are a gem.
Yeah, no, these have been fantastic. And to get him versus Suzuki commercial free this week was great. I missed that before it was announced that it was going to be commercial free.
Okay, my last news story of the week. Dark Side of the Ring is returning to Vice TV. It starts in March. And this is a interesting list of characters they're going to go through this season. We have the gentleman Chris Adams, Sensational Sherry, Terry Gorey, Black Saturday, which I didn't know much about because it was before my time. It's when Vince McMahon bought Georgia Championships Wrestling time slot and slid his program into that slot there in the Southeast. And Chris Cote, who I didn't know much about, and what I'm looking forward to seeing, he is a mid-level professional wrestler who did the territories, and I'm looking forward to this one because it looks like it's going to be interesting. They're going to do the Sandman, Earthquake, Harley Race. I'm looking forward to this Harley Race one because there's so many Harley Race stories out there. I can't imagine this not being good. Buff Bagwell. And the final one is Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Ashley, which one are you looking forward to the most?
There's a few on there. I am excited to see the Black Saturday one, but I'm also excited to see the Sensational Sherry one. I love Sensational Sherry.
That is going to be interesting because she was way ahead of her time. I can only imagine what she would be able to do in this era, which if she was in her prime in this era, she would be a manager, but she would also be in the ring kicking some ass.
Hell yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that has been your Control Center here for Ring of Free Professional Wrestling. January the 30th, 2024. Ashley, let's slide over to our stunning six questions of the week.
Time to ring the bell. As Sean and Ashley debate six stunning questions from the week of wrestling. All the whys. And what the hell was that?
In my very first stunning question, it comes from AEW Collision on Saturday night. The main event was a 3v3 escape the cage or elimination cage match, depending on who you're asking, between the House of Black, FTR, and Daniel Garcia. And there's so much controversy coming out of this match. Dave Meltzer reported on his show that the match was changed to escape because somebody in the House of Black did not want to do a job for the other team. Now, Brody King has gone on to Twitter to shut this sucker down, vehemently shut this sucker down. So, Ashley, what do you think about this match? It was a good match. I enjoyed this match. Now, granted, I thought the ending was kind of weird with the Miz and then Garcia trying to climb the cage. But do you think the House of Black maybe true didn't want to do the job?
I've heard these rumors with Malakai before. I don't genuinely understand how anybody really thinks maybe the rest of the House of Black feels that way, because I feel like Buddy Matthews takes a lot of the L's, especially for House of Black, when they do lose. And Brody King lost to an 0-4 Daniel Garcia in the Continental Classic, and it didn't seem to be like any sort of issue. I don't know how true that stuff is. I did see Will Washington tweet that they changed the wording as to make it less confusing, and that was always supposed to be the stipulation. But I don't know. I loved the match. The in-ring stuff was fantastic. I mean, it's FTR, it's Garcia, it's House of Black. It was going to be good. But that stipulation bogged that match down so badly because everything had to be so obtuse. Like, Dax and Brody had to be eliminated at the same time. Cash and Buddy had to be eliminated at the same time. And then Daniel Garcia, like, just walk out the door. What are you climbing for?
Okay, if you didn't see the spot, Daniel Garcia is in the corner. Julia Hart comes up. Misses him. I mean, like, full force misses him. And I'm going, like, he can't freaking see. So we're going to get the spot where he's going to crawl valiantly to the edge of the ring and get near to the door. And Malakai is basically going to just walk over him, slam the door, and walk out. And House of Black wins the match, which I would have been perfectly happy with, okay? No, we get Daniel Garcia somehow managing to climb up a 20-foot-high steel cage and coming down.
Yeah, the ending made it so obtuse and awkward. I wish they would have just done like an actual elimination match and just have the guys be eliminated and have like a 3-on-2 for a few minutes, then get it down to 2-on-2, or, you know, maybe have like, it, you know, be a 2-on-1 Daniel Garcia at the end or something. I don't know. It was just a weird call and a bad stipulation, honestly.
You know, I'm going to give them the benefit of doubt here with the House of Black. I feel like if AEW had hindsight and were able to go back in time, they would have led off the show with one of the announcers going, hey, in the main event, we have changed it. It's no longer an elimination cage match. It's to escape the cage match, as it's the House of Black making a change in the rules because they have the ability to change the rules, maybe. Something like that. That would work.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, just an awkward stipulation. Either just leave it how you had it, or you didn't, I don't know. Like, it's cool to have a steel cage, but it might not have been necessary if it was going to be so convoluted.
Because it was really convoluted, because since you saw the two guys on the side of the cage, and you knew there's tables underneath there, you knew they were going to go to the tables, and that's how they get eliminated. Check. And it's just like, it basically paints you into the corner, because you have to work these things out, where at one point, the House of Black was going to walk through the front door, leaving the match, winning it, all three together. Then they turn around and look at Garcia, and Garcia's like, finish me. And they're like, okay, close the door, and they come back in, and they continue.
I would just leave, like, win the match.
But it has made a very interesting Monday on Twitter. If you haven't seen it, go over and check out Brody King's Twitter account, because it was interesting. He was defending his group, which I commend him for defending his group.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, because I don't know how true any of this stuff is. I've never really seen anybody that I would consider like a news source or anything say that House of Black is unwilling to take these pins. I feel like people just feel like Malakai Black doesn't want to take pins. Buddy Matthews takes losses. Brody King takes losses. It doesn't seem like there's much of an issue with doing it.
No, I remember Malakai's Black time in NXT, and he took some losses at NXT when it was the right thing to do. And if you watch this match back, he's the last person in the cage with Garcia. He's given Garcia a lot of offense, and he loses by having Mark Briscoe slam the cage door on him and let Garcia come out. Or as Garcia come down the cage as Mark Briscoe is slamming the door on Malakai. So I feel like, in a way, he did take the L here.
Yeah. Like I said, he was injured for a long time. He came back. Like, I would like to see him have more singles competition. I'm not sure. Like, we've seen Buddy have some singles competition. We've seen Brody have some singles competition. Like, let's get the DG Malakai Black 1-on-1.
Oh, boy, that's a pay-per-view match waiting to happen. And hopefully we get to have that match before Buddy Matthews and Malakai may go back to the WWE. And if they do, that's their business, and I'll support them no matter what.
Listen, if they don't want to be there, or if anybody is genuinely unhappy, well, I've said it before, get them out then. Like, not in a bad way. Let them go. Let them go be where they want to be. You can't, like, it's so crazy to me to keep people under contract who don't want to work there, you know, on any side.
Very true, Ashley. We're going to move on to our next stunning question. Stunning question number 2. Saturday night, the men's Royal Rumble, Cody Rhodes does something that nobody has done in 26 years. The last person to do it was Stone Cold Steve Austin. He wins back-to-back Royal Rumble matches. He's heading back to WrestleMania. Actually, my question for you is, does he really need to win this match at WrestleMania to finish this story? Or can Cody Rhodes exist without having the Undisputed Universal WWE title?
He can certainly do great things without it, but I think in order to finish it, he does need to win the title. Only because it seemed like that was the whole reason for coming back. Like, you have to, there has to be somebody that you choose to beat Roman eventually. Like, you have to settle on somebody. You can't, like, it's been 2 years you've been riding this guy's popularity. Cash it in.
Ashley, we just saw Saturday night, Roman Reigns defeats Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight in the same match. Now, granted, he needed a little help from Solo, and like, now this match has become predictable. There's a Roman Reigns formula to his matches. Like, we were talking about John Cena's five moves of doom. There's like three stages to a Roman Reigns match. 1, Roman comes down to the ring. 2, he gets about 90% of the offense. And as soon as the baby faces get anywhere near to getting a win, insert said cousin. It doesn't matter which cousin, it's a cousin, and he interferes. And Roman basically stacks him and pins him. That's how you do a Roman Reigns match in the last 3 years.
Sounds like a House of Torture match. Like I said, 2 years you've been riding this guy's popularity. Everybody knows that finish the story was to win the title that his father never won. Do it. Pull the trigger.
We needed this moment 365 days ago at the first WrestleMania 39, where Cody had this chance and it been perfect. It would have been like the fans were ready. Roman has had a good long title run and they were afraid to pull the trigger. And now here we are almost a year later. And deja vu, we're going back to Mania. Can you imagine the Philadelphia crowd if Roman wins and Cody is in that ring without a title?
I think it would be brutal, honestly. Like, last year was like brutal enough, like with the rubber chicken and all of that stuff that happened. But it wouldn't even make any sense to put Cody in this position again and to not pull the trigger this time.
If they don't pull the trigger on this at WrestleMania in Philadelphia, the day after WrestleMania, if I was Cody, I'd pull a CM Punk, and the next thing you know, I'll be back on Collision going, let me tell you what I want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, they have to do it. They have to pull the trigger. It has to be Cody now.
Exactly. There's no other choice. Cody needs to be the champion.
So hopefully at WrestleMania, we can finally finish the story.
And for the life of me, after WrestleMania, I do not ever want to hear the phrase, finish the story ever again.
Yeah, I could do it out it for a while.
Okay, we're moving on to our third standing question, and we're staying in the Royal Rumble because finally we saw the in-ring debut of Jade Cargill as she was entrant number 28 in the Women's Battle Royal, and she got a dang good spot. She single-handedly eliminated Nia Jax, and the crowd in Tampa gave her a babyface cheer like no other.
Yeah, well, somebody made the right call on that one. They knew what they were doing there.
It was great. And I feel like WWE has done so much more with Jade in the limited time she's been there than AEW ever did in the 2 years she was there and the 60 wins they gave her.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of people online be like, AEW didn't fumble Jade. She was 50-0 and she was the TBS champion. And like, while I don't think they fumbled her, I mean, she wanted to go to WWE, so I don't think there was like anything they could have done to like change her mind in a way. When you have her at 50-0, she faced mostly talents that we would have seen on like AEW Dark or AEW Dark Elevation. She faced a lot of local talents. She faced a lot of like really undercard talents that aren't featured very heavily. She never had that moment. Like that moment with Bianca Belair felt huge because Bianca Belair is one of the biggest women in WWE. So immediately Jade Cargill stepping up to her and showing matching strength, matching charisma, matching, you know, everything. And to have that face off was great. If they would have benefited so much from having her have like, you know, a Britt Baker face off or something in AEW, and they never pushed her to beyond anything than what she was doing. And they never pushed her to that next level where, like you said, like WWE has already put her at that level.
Ashley, during her time in AEW, I venture to say Jade Cargill hardly ever faces anybody on the level of Nia Jax. Let that statement sink in there, ladies and gentlemen. In her 60 wins, more than a few times did anybody rise above the level of Nia Jax?
I mean, like I said, it was mostly like local talents. It was mostly people that weren't even getting like introduction, like, you know, entrances for their matches and stuff like that. And I think the biggest storyline she had was she had like a very short storyline with Nyla Rose that only went a few weeks. And then she had that storyline with Taya Valkyrie towards the end of her reign. And even that didn't really go that long. It was about a month or so. But like, as far as putting her against any of the top talent women in AEW, they never gave her that opportunity to see what she could really do. And now WWE is going to find out, you know?
Well, you know, it's kind of like when I was listening to Brian Pillman Jr. talk to Chris Van Vliet. Brian Pillman Jr. was saying, in the WWE, they give you every opportunity not to fail. And I feel the same way about Jade Cargill. They have invested a lot of money into her, and they're going to do everything in their power to put her in the best position to be a force, to be someone that would draw eyeballs to the TV set. And go back and watch that Rumble entrance of Jade Cargill and her staring down Nia Jax and her staring down Bianca Belair. They already got two storylines for her to go forward here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like I said, like her and WWE is a perfect fit because they have the system they do. It's why you need these options. You need TNA, you need AEW, you need WWE, because all these companies have a different style and a different system for their talents to go through and to come up into. And Jade is somebody who wasn't in wrestling before like 2-3 years ago, you know, like she needs to be developed more in that sense. And WWE is going to help her do that. Whereas AEW is more sink or swim. You know, like they took Danhausen and they took his indie routine, his indie everything, and they were put him on TV and they were like, here, do what you do. You know, it gets over or it doesn't.
Exactly. I agree with you. I feel like AEW is the land where you need to be on TV ready, because I don't feel they have the capability or the infrastructure to bring somebody from a quote-unquote green state to be TV ready.
No, not right now. I don't think so either. Like, they certainly have, obviously, like, a wealth of, like, talent with knowledge and stuff back there, but everybody is always focused on doing everything. Like, everybody has multiple jobs they're producing. So not everybody is taking the time to like coach talent who are, you know, asking for help or anything like that, just simply because they can't. And WWE literally has an entire performance center and coaches and trainers to help with those things that Jade might not, you know, have been taught in AEW or understand quite right just yet.
Well, one thing we need to think about before we leave this question is, the simple fact that AEW has only been around about 5 years compared to the 40 plus years of WWE. So eventually maybe AEW will be in the position where they're just like the WWE. They can take a raw talent into their system and turn them into something like Jade Cargill, but they are just not ready to do that right now.
Yeah, no, it would be cool to see. And like I said, I think they definitely, when they bring younger talents in or newer talents in, it's definitely people who, like Billy Starks, who have like grown up in professional wrestling and already have like a style and, you know, like something like that. So they'll get there. It's like you said, it's just they haven't been around. They don't have that wealth of talent yet to be able to kind of expand out into that.
Very true. Let's move on to our next standing question. As we're coming to standing question number 4 for the week, would you rather see the Okada 1, Yuzuka Okada in WWE? Or AEW?
Well, you know what I'm going to say. I'm very selfish and he should be in AEW. But I could definitely see him going to WWE. Either way, he's going to have, he could, like you said, he could go to WWE and have a feud with AJ Styles right out the gate. That could be fantastic. He could come to AEW. He seems to love TNA. Who knows? He might shock everybody.
You know, I've been thinking, they've been promising this big name talent signing. And granted, I feel like Nick Nemeth is big enough to be that talent, but could it be Okada? Could they make the biggest offer to Okada and go like, Okada, we're sorry about the first time you were here. Here's a big little bank load of cash. Can you come here and wrestle?
He seems open to it now. He doesn't seem as miffed with TNA as he was as the first time around. So it's good to see like the relationship repaired. This dude, wherever he goes, he's just going to end up at the top of the card.
Very true. And if the Royal Rumble is any example, when he appears on WWE TV, all those naysayers that say that he's not, quote unquote, a main eventer or the mainstream people will not know who he is. All you need is Michael Cole going, oh my God, as Yuzuka Okada, the former New Japan Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Champion, and he's here in the WWE. And you need to have Corey Graves just go insane with all the stats, all the Okada knowledge that you need, and that 30 seconds as he walking down to the ring will set him off on a good path in the WWE. And yes, I'm still going WWE here.
Hey, like I said, I could see him doing it, especially because we know that like Triple H he's made a play for some of these New Japan guys, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him land at least one of them.
Very true. Let's go on to our fifth standing question of the week. As we were talking about the other pending leaving talent from New Japan Pro Wrestling, Will Ospreay. Now we know his final independent date is February the 18th for Red Pro Wrestling, as he's going to face their champion one last time. Then he's AEW bound. So my question to you, Ashley, is what does Will Ospreay mean to the British pro wrestling scene? What is his legacy in making British pro wrestling?
in the last 10 years, like almost invaluable. He's like synonymous with what you think of when you think of British pro wrestling.
You know, it's kind of funny that he's leaving at the same time as Okada, because I feel like he is basically the British version of Okada. He's that important to that country and the fan base in that country.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's so weird how their stories are so entangled and entwined, and they're even like leaving at the same time. It's so crazy that the year that this guy has had just in this one year alone in 2023 and coming into 2024, he's only just scratching the surface of what he's capable of.
Yeah, and it's just crazy to think that now there's going to be this big void in the UK for their next big name talent. Now, the current champion of RevPro, he could be that next person to fill that void, but that's going to be a very big set of boots to fill because it's Will Ospreay.
Yeah, definitely going to take some time and, like you said, just gigantic boots to fill right now. But somebody's going to step up, and this is like, I'm kind of excited for a lot of things. Like, I know that like there's a lot of like, you know, sadness with like guys leaving and stuff, but it's also exciting because everybody has a lot of great young talent too.
Very true. Just check out RevPro, check out Progress, ICW. I feel like this may be the start of a new golden era in British pro wrestling. And British pro wrestling goes in cycles where you have these top stars there, then they move on internationally, and the British pro wrestling scene takes a step back and they reload. And now we're just really going to that period where we gotta wait till the next big name British talent comes out and we know who he is or she is. Okay, so we're down to my sixth and final sending question of the week. Ashley, we're just 1 month into 2024, but I need to ask this question. Do you think AEW has had a mission statement in 2024? And that mission statement is improve the women's division.
I want to hesitantly say it appears to be true. We had kind of like our one women's match on Dynamite and on Rampage, but on Collision, we had a lot of women's segments and matches. We had pretty big Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo, like recap package. And I feel like that feud is getting over pretty well. It seems like everybody seems to like that one. We got two women's matches and a post-match promo from Serena Deeb.
And oh, by the way, we got Serena Deeb back in the wrestling ring. We saw Mariah May and Lady Frost have a match. I mean, like, it feels like they basically went, oh, wait a minute, we have a women's division, and oh my god, they have all these talents here. We need to put them on TV. Imagine that.
We can do two women's matches? Who knew?
Consider mind blown.
No, I'm very happy we seem to be at least making some serious strides, at least on Collision. Like, Collision seems to be like where they're making a concentrated effort to improve the women's division. But especially having Serena Deeb back right now is nothing but a positive.
Ashley, we need Serena Deeb versus Thunder Rosa as soon as possible.
Yes.
Please, 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 please.
Give me her versus like Queen Aminata. Give me her Chris Statlander. I have so many I want to see.
Very true. So we're going to go ahead and give AEW a- in the first month of 2024 under presentation of women in professional wrestling. I feel like it's a very strong improvement from 2023, and fingers crossed it continues.
Yes, hopefully we can continue this progress.
And that has been your Stunning Six Questions here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. We're moving over to my and Ashley's favorite segment of the week. It's our top five matches.
It's Sean and Ashley's top five matches of the week. As they count down their five favorite matches from the past week, did your favorite match make the cut?
And Ashley, I got a theme yet again. I'm going to let you guess what my theme is. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first. I have one quick shout out. More for her overall presence on Friday, I wanted to just shout out Anna Jay. On Rampage, she had a backstage segment in a promo, and then she had a match with Ruby Soho, and I feel like they were both very good. Anna Jay is somebody who still very young, still learning, still going about, but I just thought a really good promo and a really good match from her.
As we were talking about in the 96 questions, one of the things I have enjoyed about the first month of 2024 is like, wait a minute, we have Anna Jay here. We used to be pushing her. Let's push her again. I'm like, yes, please.
Yeah, no, and they seem to be like maybe branching her out on her own now. So I'm kind of curious to see if they continue this push, because really good showing on Friday, so I just wanted to acknowledge that. But my actual number five is, all right, it's my number five sort of more for what it was than the match itself. It's Serena Deeb and Robin Renegade. We have not seen Serena Deeb in the ring in 15 months, I think it was.
Exactly. It has been over a year and a half. I know that for sure. And boy, did I enjoy every second of that.
It was short. It wasn't really much to write home about in terms of, like, you know, like moves. It's Serena Deeb. It was very technical. But Robin Renegade is also like a great talent to kind of bounce off of. But I was just so happy to see her back. She had some very scary health issues, and to know that she is healthy, she is back, she is here, and as she said, ready to take on some championship responsibility, I am here for it.
Exactly. I mean, there's no better thing to see in the ring than Serena Deeb doing her craft.
So good. To go from Danielson to Deeb on Saturday was like perfection.
Well, my number five match of the week is going to shock and surprise a few people. And if David Brightly is listening, he's probably going to DM me and just cuss me out, because I'm going to NXT. I'm going to Baron Corbin and Braun Breaker teaming together versus Axiom and Nathan Frazier. I can't believe I said I enjoyed a Baron Corbin match, but Braun Breaker and Baron Corbin put together may be one of my favorite tag teams right now. And I can't believe I'm saying this.
I love when you can find that. Like there's so many times I've seen a wrestler where like they try something and it doesn't resonate and it doesn't resonate and it doesn't resonate. And then they switch up the gimmick, they switch up their style or whatever. And then you're like, oh, there it is. That's it. Yes. Now you can connect with them. Now you can love them and stuff. Braun Breaker is fantastic. That spear was sick.
And oh, hey, he got the spot that was open up with Brock Lesnar not being in the Rumble. And if you didn't see Braun Breaker in the Rumble, they're treating this guy like a main event player. And I got a feeling after this Dusty Cup is over, we may be seeing Braun Breaker on the main card. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, no, they have so many talents too that they need to like bring up and just push them to the moon because they're ready. You put Braun Breaker there, do it. Like, let's see what he has. Like, put him on that main roster spot and let him go.
Okay, Ashley, what is your number four match of the week?
All right, so number four. Rampage, John Moxley and Lee Moriarty. I feel like this was a match. I don't know if this was an actual attempt to consistently make Rampage worth the watch and worth the wait for 10 p.m. or if this was kind of like their quarterly try. Sometimes with Rampage that they try to have like a really good card, but I feel like Friday was like a really great card, and to have John Moxley on there, especially against somebody like Lee Moriarty, was fantastic. Lee Moriarty is somebody I want to see get like the Daniel Garcia push.
He's another low mid-card talent they have. They kind of push him every now and then. And he'll be part of Shane Taylor's promotion now. And if you didn't see the tag team match on Collision, Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty versus Moxley and Claudio, go check that one out too. It didn't make my top five, but I was trying to debate how to get it onto my top five list. And I'm happy that you had the singles match instead.
Yeah, no, the idea of Shane Taylor Promotions and the BCC going at it definitely is interesting. These are all like very heavy hitting dudes, so I'm into this.
Well, interesting you say you like heavy hitting, because my number four match, I'm going back to Dynamite, because I didn't know I needed this match until I saw this match happen. And I'm talking about Adam Copeland versus Murder Grandfather Minoru Suzuki. Oh my word, in the year 2024, we just got to watch Adam Copeland versus Minoru Suzuki. I can go on with anything else now, because that match was freaking amazing.
They beat the hell out of each other.
And I love the fact that after the match, Copeland is trying to do the respect thing, and Murder Grandfather is like, I ain't gonna have none of that.
I don't know if he's ever been hit that hard. That was vicious, vicious, some of those shots. Not very long, but didn't need to be. Just throwing some haymakers.
Very true. So, Ashley, what is your number three match of the week?
All right, so number three. I went with New Japan, Road to New Beginning. Zack Sabre Jr. and Tiger Mask. Very technical match, of course, with Zack Sabre Jr. A lot of reversals, a lot of just smooth in-ring reversals and stuff like that. Definitely really enjoyed it, and I'm Zack Sabre Jr.'s shit-talking for Bryan Danielson and the build-up for this match is fantastic.
That was a very fun opener to watch about 5 o'clock in the morning because I watched it live and I loved every minute of it. And just the fact that it set up DMK for the rest of the card, and you were thinking maybe just maybe they lead a new never open six man tag team champions at the end of the night. More of that to come later, but this match with Tyler Mask versus Zack Sabre Jr. is a must see and well worth your $9.99 to have New Japan Pro Wrestling for a month. So my number three match, I'm going to TNA Impact Wrestling. It's their main event, as they had two hell main events week after week here. And this week, we had the Machine Guns and Okada versus the System. Now, the System is Moose, their current champion, Brian Myers, and Eddie Edwards. And the fact you see Okada in a TNA ring after his first stint in TNA, one, that's kind of impressive. Two, this match was kind of fun because Okada is out there just having fun with Myers and Moose and Edwards, and Myers has to eat a Rainmaker. He ate it like a champ and actually hit the shell shot for the 1-2-3.
Okada and Motor City Machine Guns is like a dream team.
You know, the whole idea of Okada going to TNA after seeing that match is like, Okada, TNA. Yes, TNA is where you need to go.
I said, genuinely, I would be surprised, but not really that surprised.
And it kind of left me wanting to see Moose versus Okada. And you know what? Why not put the TNA World Heavyweight Championship on Okada? I mean, like, that would be a fun match.
That would be really fun.
Okay, Ashley. So we're going on to your number two match of the week. And what is your number two match of the week?
All right. So sticking with New Japan, the six-man tag match. Okada, Ishii, Tanahashi, and TMDK. My only gripe about this match is the outcome. I understand it, but I put the belts on TMDK. You know, don't have them lose and then just have them relinquish the titles. But already from the beginning, you knew it was going to be emotional. And Okada, Ishii, and Tanahashi is just an insane trio to have as your champions.
Okay, so I'm going to put a pin in this. This is my number one match of the week. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what my number two match of the week is, and I'm going to offer you my counter-argument to your argument that TDMK should have been the champions. I feel like it was okay for them not to be the champions, and I'll explain more later, but my number two match of the week is another match I didn't know I needed until they put it together and put it on Collision. It's the American Dragon, Brian Danielson, versus Yuji Nagata, Blue Justice himself. Oh my word, if you didn't think Adam Copeland and Murder Grapher was cool, go check Collision out, because the American Dragon versus Nagata, oh my freaking word, that was great too. And please, can we have another one, please?
That's my number one. Fantastic. Yuji Nagata is 55 years old. He gets up and puts on a match of that quality. Insane. Bring all the New Japan talents over. Let Brian Danielson fight all of New Japan.
Yes, just fly one over every so often, maybe once a week, once every other week, and give them like 20 minutes on Rampage or 20 minutes on Collision, and we will be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said that was your number one match of the week. We're going back to my number one match of the week. And yes, it's from Corrigan Hall. It's Okada's final match in Corrigan Hall. If that was emotional enough, just watching the Rainmaker walk out to the ring as the fans are already chanting Okada as soon as his music hits. And he walks out and he takes it all in. And to me, Ashley, there's no way when I saw the reaction of the crowd and Okada that they're going to let him lose his final match in Corrigan Hall. No.
No, that's what I figured. It's still like, I'm not saying you have to like, you know, pin Okada or beat Okada himself or anything. It sucks to have like somebody lose and then them just vacate the titles.
Well, I got a feeling that maybe they'll allow the other two members of that team to add a third member to defend these titles. And there may be a rematch for DMK down the road with a new trio to face. But this moment was perfect. And I'm happy that Okada gets sent off with a win. And he literally breaks down in the middle of the ring, thanking the fans to be there for him and cheer him all these years as this is his final time. And the most, I gotta say, Corrigan Hall is probably the most famous arena in Japan. I think it's above the Tokyo Dome. And just to have that last match for now was great. And it left me going like, I feel for Okada. And I could feel the emotion as his tears were raining on the side of his face. I'm like, sad for him, happy for him.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for the next chapter.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely understand not like wanting to have Okada lose and stuff like that. I just, sometimes you have a chance to kind of make somebody like a big star as well. I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying like you had to have anybody pin Okada or anything, but it's so, even Ishii breaking down in the post-match like comments and stuff about Okada leaving, like the toll that this has on not only the talents, like it sort of sucks to not see Okada and Fujita be able to go at it again right now, because that whole story in that match between those two is phenomenal.
You know, eventually I'm hoping New Japan can work with Okada to bring him back over for maybe Dominion, or maybe you put that on a Wrestle Kingdom card where you give the young lion the opportunity to have that victory over Okada, and you set him off as being the next big thing in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That would send anybody through the roof, and especially Fujita, who I feel like has a lot of support already. Like he's super over. He's definitely got the talent, and I can't believe he's only what, 21, 22, they said? He's so young.
It's really scary, the fact that he's that young, but yet that talented. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy. So, Ashley, your number one match of the week. I know it's the American Dragon. I know it's Nagata. Tell us all about why you love this match.
Oh my God, because when I watch Bryan Danielson wrestle, I can't do anything else. I'm not on my phone. I'm not checking out anything. Everything he does to me is captivating, and I love everything from the way he came out and totally blows by Eddie Kingston and doesn't even so much as look at him and comes in, and he's like, I love this like weird attitude he has of like crossing the line of almost being a heel, but like he's so lovable that like nobody will boo him.
You know, it's interesting because yes, he does a lot of heel tactics, and he's like the biggest jerk to Eddie Kingston ever, but yet the fans who cheer for Eddie Kingston will cheer for Daniel Bryan.
He's so good, you can't not cheer for him. And when they have their eventual blow-off match, like, oh, it's going to be so good.
It is, it's going to be great. But this match was really amazing. And the fact that for a moment there, I thought Neji Nagata was going to win the match. And Bryan always does this where he makes his opponent look so good. He gives you that disbelief that he may lose this match. And there's always that one mistake that the opponent does. And there we go. The American Dragon capitalizes. And we can look forward to him battling Eddie Kingston down the road.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, Yuji Nagata is 55 years old. Like, let's not forget that. Like, that man is out there having that kind of quality match at 55 years old.
Exactly. He's putting all of us to shame being 10 years younger than him and not anywhere near as athletic as he is.
Oh, I know. And it was so cool to see him come back to AEW, and I hope to see him come back again soon.
True. Oh, by the way, Adam Copeland open challenge. Nagata Copeland. Who's booking this? Sign it up now.
Yeah. If we're going to have like Bryan Danielson take on some Japanese legends, I don't see why Copeland can't continue to take on some Japanese legends as well.
So true. So it was a great week in professional wrestling inside the ring. Maybe not outside the ring, but inside the ring, great week in professional wrestling. And we're going to end this episode here for this week on Ready Free Professional Wrestling. Ashley, where can we find you on the super information superhighway?
I am on Twitter, and it's @groovy_ash_.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can always follow this show on Twitter @RayofreePW, where you can also find us on Instagram underneath the same handle, RayofreePW. And if you want to go over to YouTube, sign up for Radio Free Professional Wrestling, you can listen to our podcast there. And maybe in a couple weeks, we'll be starting live stream the recordings, and you can join us every Sunday night as we record these shows and to see how much fun me and Ashley have putting this show together.
That's actually really cool.
You can always follow the show on our website at RayofreePW.com, where you can sign up for your favorite podcast catcher. But Ashley, as always, it's our groovy and stunning era. And yes, scissor guns up. Scissor guns.
Scissor guns up.
Christina here. On behalf of the guys, thanks for listening. Like the show? Do us a favor and share it with a friend. Have a stunning question? Email it to the show at radiofreeprowrestling@gmail.com. Until next time, this has been Radio Free Pro Wrestling. Stay stunningly.